Temp Network provides productive and reliable temporary staff to your business. We supply temps across Kent within food production, fulfillment houses, picking and packing environments, and warehouse staff. With great value for money charge rates, error-free invoicing, and highly trained consultants. Shouldn't Temp Network be supporting your business? For more information, please contact us on 01892 531 777 or visit tempnetwork.co.uk.
Channelradio.co.uk.
Scoff and Quaff Show with Jules Serkin on Channel Radio.
And hello and a warm good morning to you all in that sunny Romney Marsh Dymchurch. John Sykes and I have been galloping around chasing alpacas. Haven't managed to catch one, but we wanted a pair of socks because it is a bit nippy still in the evenings, you may have noticed. I've been up all night with my new husband who has a chest infection which I gave him. So, of course, it's all my fault. He was hacking away all night, John. I sent him down with Olbus oil.
Oh, yes, it's very good, that, actually. It is. It does help. It makes you hack even more, but it brings it all up.
So to speak. Cracking show, Dr. John.
Yes, we have indeed. We've got Colin phoning in from Spain, talking about your favourite drink, of course, cava.
My one weakness.
Your 51st weakness. And we have the young Ben coming on, talking about his bugs and how we can eat them and how tasty they are. That's Ben Bartlett from at Bush Grub. And we also have the chef, don't we?
We do.
Who interviewed him last week.
Michel Roux. And I have to say, I mean, we meet a lot of chefs and they're all, I really like chefs. I think on the whole, as a bunch, they're a nice lot. A lot of them are very rotund and cuddly, and that's sort of kind of how I like a chef to be.
I'm sure Graham Greene will love to be called rotund and cuddly.
But he's a cook, of course. He's doing a very nice salted caramel cheesecake, I've noticed. I rather fancy that. But Michel Roux, I've noticed celebrity chefs are all thinning down, you see. Margiela's slimming. Michel Roux, very slim chap. So I guess once you're on the telly, you have to slim down, don't you, Dr. John?
You do indeed.
Luckily,
well, that's why you and
not.
I aren't on
telly. Touché. Touché.
You see, but young Ben here, he could be on telly. He's nice and thin.
He's
lad,
lovely,
isn't he?
Because all he lives on is insects.
Yeah, well, you see, I suppose perhaps I should switch to insects.
So we're going to be talking about my one weakness, which is Spanish sparkling wine, with Colin, who is... Colin Harkness is a wine expert. He's a writer and TV broadcaster. He's an expert and a judge on Spanish wine for over 18 years. His website is www.colinharknessonwine.com. On the Twitter, he's at colinonwine. And he's based in Alicante, Moraira. And Moraira is where I have a little house on the mountain. So it'll be really nice because I'll be able to quaff some wine with him, hopefully, and learn a lot about it. Now,
he realise how much quaffing you do of wine?
Well, I'm sure he forces a bit down. Now, if I rush off... with a cough, it's because I have a frog in my throat. Can't help it. I've had it for 3 weeks now.
A grand oui.
Oui, a grand oui dans mon... What's the throat?
Gorge, I think, if I remember.
I know what it is in Arabic. It's a rukbaga.
Yeah. Well, of course, I mean, that's just what everyone wants to know on a radio show talking about food.
No, isn't it coup in France? De coup,
is it? I don't know. I can't remember.
I know. I have to look on my Clarins or Gino.
I'm sure one of our listeners will tweet in and tell us what it is.
So, Dr. John, you rattle on because I've actually watched Paul Andrews rush in. I've actually got the wrong playlist on. I've got the 22nd of October, so I'm going to have to clear this. So you rattle on while I clear it, darling.
Okay, well, I was going to talk about a new place that's opening up in Kent, which is the Tanners Brothers, renowned restaurateurs, who are opening up a new pub in Bidborough. Next month, Originally from Tunbridge Wells, Chris and James are heavily involved in planning and refurbishing a new village pub, which is going to be called the Kentish Hare.
Right. And aren't we invited for the
launch? Yeah, indeed.
The launch?
Yes, we are indeed invited for the launch. And this was formerly, apparently, the Hare and Hounds, and it was purchased by Enterprise Inns, the local residents Sir Keith and Lady Maureen Mills, in June 2013. And they're very keen. And Lady Mills is passionate about interior designing, and is working alongside them. So this is going to be opening up in the public opening is Saturday, May the 10th, on 3W's the Kentish
Treble Seven.
So what was all that about?
Sorry, I'm playing with Paul's knobs.
Well, I'm sure Paul will be absolutely delighted you're playing with his knob there.
Because I got the wrong playlist on. I got 22nd
that's
of October.
That's your excuse. That's your excuse.
I was in October.
Well, as I was saying, and if you wish to if you wish to know more about the Kentish Hare, go on their website, 3wskentishhare.com, or call 01-892-525-709 for more information.
Sounds fantastic.
Have you finished playing with Paul's knob now?
Yes, I have. He's rushed off. He loves it when I get it wrong. He loves it.
I'm sure he does.
I'm very interested also later on in the show, if you have ever thought about eating an insect, we will be speaking to, as Dr. John said, the fabulous Ben Bartlett, who, he's amazing because he's only, how old are you, 19, Ben? 22. Oh, you look 19. Take the mic over to your head. 19. So you're 22, but
22,
you started this business yourself when you were 17.
I started my first business at 17, but I started the bugs at 19.
You're amazing, absolutely
you.
Amazing. And Ben's brought in this flour, which I've just put out on Twitter. It's insect protein flour, a cricket sample, I'm told, and apparently you can bake bread with it. So we're going to be hearing about that.
So you're going to be baking bread insect bread, are you?
Possibly.
It's gluten free, presumably, is it?
Yes, it is.
Well, yes, I'm sure it is.
So, any more tweets? What's happening on Twitter?
We've had quite a lot of tweets.
We have.
Yes, we've had.
They started yesterday. The horrors
gets earlier and earlier, doesn't it? We have to sort of get our act together on the day before
it's
now.
Not going to happen, is it?
So we know we've had a number of tweets in, some new ones. We've got Formaldehyde at Formaldehyde 76, which is he's tweeting about the Roux interview. That's the chef at Oscar Bentley's in Canterbury. So welcome there. We've also had X Delights, Exquisite Delight Catering in the United States, who are also tweeting their new Twitters for us. And he's also tweeting because of Michelle Roux coming on. And we have a micro home bakery, which is Flix Fancies.
Flix Fancies, yes. They were on our show years ago.
Were they?
Yeah, last year. I know the name. I don't know how. I thought they were on our show. Maybe
I made it up. I don't remember them being on
but
the
do
show.
You remember anything, really?
Well, I do, yes.
Only where the next meal is coming from, I think. Talking of meals, you went to Blue Water and had a nice
meal.
Yes,
we went to the Blue Water, for those of you that know, is near Rochester, Gillingham, or just off the M2. We went to Blue Water, we did a bit of shopping with my other half, and we went into a lovely restaurant, which was a brasserie, which is Coates Brasserie in Blue Water, and we had a lovely meal. It was absolutely delightful. It was lunch, so it wasn't too heavy. And really tasty, and the service was superb. So, well recommended.
You did a lot of scoffing. You also, didn't you send me a picture of a lobster and a burger?
Oh, that was in London. We went to a lobster and burger bar in London the same day.
That
I had a lobster and burger.
No, that made me a bit upset when you sent me that, because I was having a bit of old dried up toast and Marmite.
But that was really good, actually. It's in Soho. And for £20, you get a whole lobster.
Wow.
Which is actually very good value.
I do love lobster.
The only problem is I love lobster, but I just don't like the hard effort to get it out.
I know.
So, but you can actually have the whole lobster either grilled or boiled and grilled, or you can actually have all the meat in a sandwich and all the work done for you.
You see, what you want is follow at my one weakness. That's my
this
number
is about
one weakness.
We must be up to 1,000 one weaknesses you've got.
Well,
now.
No, but the lady, my one weakness, who is a follower of us.
Oh, okay.
My one weakness, she is, and she's Dame Scoff a lot. She lols. she lolls on a chaise longue, doesn't she, and gets men to just crack the lobster claws for her and see
Oh, she
her.
Does she?
She's got it right.
Yeah, okay,
you know, that's what you need to do.
Well, you need to get your new husband to do that for you.
Oh, my new husband don't even. He's just his book is everything. You know, I haven't seen.
So he won't crack lobsters for you whilst you lie down on a chaise longue.
No, he won't. He's
well, get Shay to do it then.
He's become very one-tracked as an author. He's
one-eyed.
Let himself go. He looks like Robinson Crusoe.
I'm sure he'll be delighted to hear you're announcing his looks out of the
Some
radio.
Shipwrecked sort of writer. We've just had a new follower from Seattle, and he is Dan Buckley, and it's at Peace Merc Dan, M-E-R-C Dan. So hi to you guys. You can't be up. They must be asleep, surely. I suppose if he's a rocker. Be up all night. Tunbridge Farmers Market, hello to you guys.
Yes, they're and Elms Court and Aylesford have all been on.
And the fabulous Kentin Crepe.
Yes, indeed.
Bonjour.
Who were on 2 weeks ago.
Bonjour. Well, I'm going to grab back, now I've got the right playlist. I'm going to, that's why I couldn't play your Cha-Cha Rhythm
that's,
Boys.
That's why you were grabbing hold of Paul.
Yeah, it? Paul's yeah. knobs. So now I'm going to play Is That Love Squeeze, and we're going to get Colin Hartness, our wine expert in Moreira in Alicante on the coast. He's going to tell us that Spanish wine is not just cava. There's a lot more to it.
Right.
And he's going to come on once a month and be our resident wine expert. So if you have any questions on Spanish wine or indeed any other wine, do let us know. I hope Beaujolais Boy are listening and also Budgeons Invicta, Binny, because what we're saying is that Colin may be giving you some heads up on what to stock on your shelves that
Indeed.
I can come and buy it all.
Well, I will get him on the telephone and we will talk to him.
Yes, here's Squeeze. You've left my ring by the soap. Now is that love? You cleaned me out, you could say broke. Now is that love? The better. You won't get dressed, you walk about. Now is that the teasing glance to push me out? Now is that the tougher it gets? The more my lips frequent, now that is love. Beat me up with your letters, your walkout notes. Funny how you still find me. You called my bluff, I'm not so hot. Now is that love? My accent froze while yours just dropped. Now is that? It's the cupid disguise. The more or less divide. Now that is love. Now is that love? The more you cool down, the easier love is found. Now that is love. Oh, that was lovely, Squeeze. I do love that song. Brings back memories of me on Clapham Common dancing and prancing about. Now, I'm very excited that we have our wine expert, Colin Harkness, from Alicante Moreira in España. And he is, as I said before, a writer and TV broadcaster. He is an expert and a judge as well on Spanish Panel for International Wine and Spirits Competition. He's been a judge and a wine expert for over 18 years. And he is also the kind of guy that you can ask, you know, if, for example, if you're having a bit of lamb, what would you have with it? But today we're going to have a little introduction from Colin on sparkling Spanish wine. Is it just cava? Colin Harkness, tell us.
Hello, Jules. Hello, everybody.
Hola, well. Guapo.
Hablas español, no?
Un poco. I wanted to ask you first, what's the weather like?
Well, I was going to say that, but I wasn't sure if it would rub things in.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what it's like in Kent, but as you've asked, I'm looking out of my office window, perfect blue sky. It's probably about 20 degrees now and expected to get to about 27 during the day. Are you glad you asked?
I'm a little bit sick because I've got my little house there on the mountain in Maraira, but as my new husband is writing this book, he won't let me go.
Oh, dear.
Because I'm having to sort of feed him and all that stuff, keep it all going. I'm very excited to have you on the show, and thank you very much. And I guess it's 20 past 12 there, is it?
Indeed it is, yes, yes. Breakfast long away, and now looking forward to lunch.
A little bit of, what will you be having, a little bit of tapas? Or?
Well, I'll probably be having some cava with lunch, actually.
Ooh. Now, tell us where to start on a Spanish wine and a Spanish sparkling wine, Colin.
Well, let me tell you a little aside to start off with. It's just come into my head now, talking about lunch with cava. I don't know if you've ever been to Barcelona, I'm sure you have.
Barcelona, yes, I know.
Well, if you stay in the 4-star plus hotel, which I'm sure you do, of course.
Oh, well, a little bit of Gaudi.
Yes, absolutely. Well, when you go down for breakfast, you'll notice that I think it's absolutely wonderful way to start the day. They always have a bottle of cava down there as well, so you can either drink it straight or do a Buxus or whatever you want. And I think that's a perfect way of starting the day. So cava, yes. Well, Barcelona, that area, Catalonia, that's essentially the home of cava. But very interesting as well because it's one of the very few denominaciones de origen, areas of production that is, which isn't confined to just one geographical area. So Catalonia, yes, of course, everybody knows that Catalonia makes sparkling wine cava, and of course it's very famous, it makes about 95% of it, but you can get it in various other places. In actual fact, in the land where I am now, in the Comunidad de Valencia, you can make it in a certain part of Valencia, and I quite often drink theirs. You can make it in various different places as well, including, strangely enough, right in the centre of La Rioja. But of course it's not called La Rioja, it's called cava. It's been going since about 1872. There was a chap called Josep Raventós, who decided that he liked what he drank when he went to Paris visiting once, and of course that was champagne, and he decided that he'd like to have a go at sort of replicating it over here, and it became very successful.
Well, I mean, it is, and there's something about that. I've actually got something to play for you here, just one little tiny thing. Have a listen to this.
Yeah.
There's something about that little pop, isn't there?
Yes, absolutely, yes, yeah.
That makes it special.
Where did you get that from? I think you had some last night, didn't you?
She always has some.
That's Dr. John speaking there, Colin.
But the empty bottles of cava are just legendary outside her house.
Absolutely. Yes,
I do recycle. So when you're, you know, sometimes, in fact, the other day I was out and I went to a wine bar and I had not a very pleasant cava. And you know when you get that, it was a little bit, I'm not an expert, you're the expert, but it was a bit apple-y.
Well, that's interesting you should say that. There are a couple of things I'd like to say to that. I'll come back to the apple bit in a moment if you don't mind. But first of all, it's like anything else. There's cava and there's cava. There is cava which is made for the, basically, the very cheap market. And for example, over here...
You're calling me cheap, Colin?
Pardon?
You're calling me cheap?
Certainly not.
She I'm served
not
me up a cheap
that's not the one.
One
you had, of course. No. I'm talking about your husband.
Oh, yes. Well, he is, yes. Yes, he is.
not that I've ever met him, of course.
You will.
Yeah, okay, hopefully. And so, yes, you, provided you obey all the rules, because these DOs, these denominaciones de origen, they actually tie themselves up, really, in various different bits of red tape. And provided that you... make it according to all those rules, there isn't, in my opinion, sufficient quality control. So you can buy cava, for example, over here in the local supermarket for about €1.60, which equates to, I don't know, what, about £1.20 or something like that. And clearly, if you're going to pay that much money for a sparkling wine, well, on, I don't want to be rude, but it's not going to be very good. Mm. You get what you pay for. But the apple part of it, incidentally, of course, I don't know the wine bar you went to last night.
I do know it gave me a terrible hangover because I'd started off with Riverford Organic Prosecco, which I can happily drink and never, ever get a hangover. Mm. But then, you know, the evening deteriorated and we went for a little crawl. It wasn't last night. It was last week. I have recovered. But I just knew it wasn't nice. But we had no choice. It was all they had to offer.
Yes, it's disappointing. It's something that I'll probably, over the coming months, sort of raise again. And that Spanish wine, there is an absolute massive array of Spanish wines that you can get here. Sadly, but for obvious reasons, you don't get the same sort of array in England. Obviously, they've got a certain amount of shelf space, and it has to be filled with all manner of different wines and sparkling wines as well. There are a few famous ones, which obviously I wouldn't be surprised if we get on to talking about later on.
But generally,
you can get a vast array of different wines, including sparkling wines. I mean, I've been looking at a book today in sort of a bit of research, really, for the program today, and there are so many different cava producers. Obviously, I can mention a couple of them perhaps a bit later on. But to come back to the apple part of it, I did say I wouldn't lose that. The reason you're getting that probably is because one of the three main traditional grape varieties is actually called Viura, that's called Macabeo in Catalan area. It's called Viura in La Rioja. And the Macabeo, actually, when you're tasting it as a dry white wine, very often writers like myself will actually come up with the phrase that it has a little sort of an appley flavour to it.
Right.
Or maybe when it comes to sparkling, people are actually talking about a cider sort of nuance, and possibly that's what you taste as well. But it's not a bad thing. It really depends on whether your taste is like that. There are other great varieties, which if there's a greater proportion of the other ones, you wouldn't get the appley flavour so much.
Mm. I know that. So what would you be eating with a cava? Because, I mean, I sort of start off as a pre-aperitif, but then I like to continue. I like to drink it throughout the whole meal.
Well, that's very interesting, and I'm glad you said that, in actual fact, because I like to do that as well.
Oh, good. We're going to get on so well, Colin.
I can see that, yes.
Cousin buddies.
I'm not sure if your husband's listening to this. That's the problem.
No, he's writing. He never stops.
Well, incidentally, and I'm actually from the Wirral Peninsula, as you can possibly tell from my accent, and I once went many years ago to a champagne tasting there, where the champagne was selected to go with the various different courses, so, because there are different styles of champagne. Well, the same thing applies here as well with cava and sparkling wine in general, of course, because as I've mentioned to you over the emails, etc., Spain is not just about cava when it comes to sparkling wine. There are various other sparkling wine producers as well, very often using the same grape varieties, etc., but for different reasons they've decided to opt out of the cava DO. But yes, you can certainly drink cava with various different parts of the meal.
Well, and I do, and then I like to also have it after the meal with a little coffee following up as well.
Yes, absolutely. Very often in Spain, if there's going to be a toast made, the toast will be made, unlike in the UK, we like to toast things at the start of dinner, don't we, about the celebration, etc. And of course, what's better than some fizz for a celebration? But very often in Spain, they have it at the end of it, and it can be a brut one, or it could be a slightly sweeter one to go with the dessert.
And on occasion, there's a little restaurant I went to just by the port there on the corner.
Mm-hmm.
There are two brothers in Moreira, and one of them has got that sort of Spanish place on the road as I come in. I always forget his name because he always plies me with all those awful post aperitifs, after the meal things.
Yes, Mistela.
Thank you, and I get absolutely blasted.
Well, they're very high in alcohol, of course.
I can't remember his name. He's lovely, but his brother also owns a restaurant on the corner, and they served me a cava with a strawberry in, which was delicious.
Yeah, yes. Well, that's quite common, isn't it? I was actually reading a tweet today, I can't remember who it was, who was talking about a certain strawberry cake with cava.
Ah.
So that's quite interesting.
Yeah.
I personally don't like to do that.
A bit girly for you, perhaps, Colin.
Well, I consider it cava abuse to put fruit in it.
I can imagine. I mean, you're much butcher than I am, so, you know.
Yes, probably. Of course, yes. I'm in the rather fortunate position of very rarely having to buy any wine. People, producers from all over Spain, send it to me. It's a dreadful job, really, this, and I have to drink it, you know, it's awful.
John, Jules will be changing her profession, I think.
John, you're a French winey, aren't you? So do you want to ask Colin anything on Spanish?
Well, as Jules said, I mean, I have family in France and I tend to visit France fairly regularly, so I'm quite familiar with a lot of
Spends
the French.
The whole time scoffing.
French wine as well. The French food is very good as well, but I'm not so familiar with the Spanish wines. Although I've drunk fairly copious amounts of them over the years.
Yes, I'm sure.
So I'm very interested to hear anything about the wines, but particularly I like Rioja.
Yes,
which is a lovely wine.
Rioja, of course, is the most famous place I would say for producing wine in Spain, and it's certainly true. There is wonderful Rioja. Mm. About 10 years ago, in my opinion, and other commentators as well, it went through a bit of a poor period. But I think they've pulled their socks back up. And in fact, they're producing good quality now. Mm. But it's like I said earlier on, you get what you pay for.
Yeah. As always in life, it's not just wine.
Well, absolutely. If you're buying a Rioja in a supermarket and it costs €4.50 for a Crianza, spelled Crianza, or maybe €5.50 or something for a Reserva, basically it's not going to be a good quality wine. You do have to pay a little bit more for that. But if you're actually talking about your love of French wine, and I understand that, I love French wine as well, of course, I would look for wines from Priorat, because there's a sort of a French element to those wines.
Priorat?
Priorat. It's nothing to do with essence of rat.
Oh,
don't
dear.
I can spell that for you, actually. Priorat. Priorat.
Okay. Priorat. That sounds better.
These wines have a little bit of a French feel to them, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's interesting.
Thank you very much. Well, so people, Colin Harkness is going to be a regular on the show and be telling us each month a little bit. So if you have any tweets for him for next month, let us know. Now, you can spy Colin on www.colinharknessonwine.com. And as soon as I come out tomorrow, I'm going to meet up with you. You know that.
Yeah, fine, excellent.
We'll
do a little glass of cava, perhaps.
Yes, a glass. Oh.
Normally does it by the crate.
but I'm happy to get my plancher out and do a lovely little, throw some prawns and some rabbit and things on.
You mean you're actually capable of throwing prawns and rabbits on a
good
barbecue?
Good heavens, Jules. This sounds wonderful.
Or is this your new husband that's going to be doing that?
Yeah, generally he does it and I sort of watch.
Yeah, watch drinking the cava, yes.
Well, my fiancé and I would actually love to come over there. My fiancé, did you notice that?
Hmm. Yes, I know. I'm very impressed. And also, of course, you are the land of paella, aren't you?
Indeed, we are. In fact, we had one just on Saturday.
Oh, I do love a paella. So perhaps next time you can tell us a nice cava to have or a nice sparkling to have and some wines to have with a paella.
I will certainly do that. In fact, very quickly, I know you want to move on to the next guest, but I received a bottle of wine not long ago, which was actually designed to go with the paella. And, of course, we had to try it out, didn't we?
Ah, cool.
Of course.
And it went down well?
It did, very well, yes, actually, very well, yes. It's from an area that I'm sure I'll be able to have a chance to talk about over the coming months.
Brilliant. Well, for now, Colin, thank you very much for coming on, and you go off and have a lovely lunch, sit in the sun, make sure you wear a hat and some sun protection.
With a head like mine, I have to.
and we'll speak to you very soon. That's Colin Harkness. Bye, Colin.
Many thanks. Goodbye now.
Cheers. Bye for now.
That's lovely, Colin, telling us all about... I feel quite thirsty now. I think I'm...
What a surprise.
I'm going to play Electric Avenue, Eddie Grant, for my buddy, my pilot buddy. You do remember when I was off in Cairo and I met
Yes, you were chatting up these pilots.
Yeah, so. Three very glamorous pilots, and they invited me to dinner on the 18th floor, darling, of the Marriott. And I had many a frolic of wine with them.
I'm sure you did.
And if Bill's wife is listening, it was all above board. But he says that Rob is listening in, who's the other glamour pilot, who looks a bit like Bill Clinton. And he's engaged. He's getting married in June. So well done, Rob. He's been snared. So he won't be footloose and fancy free anymore.
Oh, this is BH Jet.
Yes, the lovely Bill Hammond. Yeah. He's a saxophonist and a pilot. So here's for you guys, Electric Avenue, Eddie Grant. I hope you enjoy it. We do. Have a little boogie. Where are you? Are you in Cairo? A bit of Eddie Grant rocking in the daytime. I feel quite reggae, but now we're going to have a little ditty or so with a bit of Spanish music in honour of Colin. And I expect Colin's sitting somewhere, don't you, John, by a little pool, just opening a little bottle.
Yes, a carver pool.
Yeah, just a little sun hat on.
Yeah, well, I'm going to tell you about a Hanover cure.
I bet he's got flip-flops on.
Yes, well, this will be
Hangover
right.
Cure?
Yes, it's right up your street. I thought you'd be interested. Apparently, scientists in Korea have found that a new hangover treatment that really does work, and it's red ginseng, which I'm sure everyone's heard of, which is a plant that grows in both the States and in Asia. And apparently, they've shown that when they're given a sample of 40% proof whiskey to people.
How much percent?
40%. Nice strong whiskey. Is that all the men, they had their blood test done over a period of 6 hours, and they found that those with that had taken the red ginseng actually had a significantly lower hangover symptoms. So for those of you like yourself, Jules, as a passion for carver and other alcoholic drinks, it's the aldehyde, the acetaldehyde in the alcohol when it's metabolized that causes the hangover. If you take red ginseng, it will actually help. But interestingly, from my own experience, I used to work in Korea at one time, and they used to have an amazing drink which I never got to the bottom of, which was like a tonic, which you had the most fearful hangover, and it would perk you up, and you'd last almost exactly 4 hours, and then you'd go pass out just like that. And my general manager and myself used to get absolutely plastered the night before, and then be up at 7 o'clock the next morning, and I'd get this bottle in the car with his driver, and he'd just give it to me, and I'd be fine for the next 4 hours, and I had to go to bed at 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
My dear, it's such a misspent youth. Well, I know my pilot friends would love that ginseng remedy because they obviously are not allowed to drink before they fly. So
it doesn't mean say you're not inebriated, it just means you don't have the hangover.
Well, I did have a terrible hangover after that cheap carver.
Well, now, what
say.
A surprise.
I know. I do like my... without the tannins and all that stuff that they put in. Mm. Now, of course, last Thursday I was summoned to Shibbum Market, which is in the beautiful, beautiful village of Shibbum. I think it's a hamlet, actually. Very, very nice pub there. Can't remember the name. I've got a picture of me floating about outside it.
Drinking carbon.
And I think I was drinking Kentish cider with the lovely Steve
you
Wood.
Had a hangover.
No, lovely Steve Wood. Actually, something rather odd happened to me, which I must warn people about, but we need to play. I'll do it next week. We're going to play, because I met the lovely Michel Roux, Jr., and what a charming chef he is. He really is, and as I was saying, a lot of you chefs are very cuddly and gorgeous, but he's obviously done the old, I think he might be doing a gluten-free diet, because he looked very lean, you know, that sort of lean look that you get when you do the gluten-free and working out. But I'm only assuming that. I'm not telling you that. But he was charming. And now I'm just going to play his interview for you and see what he thinks about Kent and farmers markets. And I'm here at the Shipbourne Farmers Market. And I bought some lovely honey. I've tasted some fantastic honey. I think I'm supposed to say Shibbum, but I am a DFL, so I have trouble, as you know, with the Kentish words. And I've tracked down Michel Roux Jr., because he's been in demand. There's been a queue, frankly, and I've been here since about 6 o'clock this morning. Michel, you're here supporting Shibbum Farmers Market. Have you seen a big lean towards farmers markets in the recent year?
Yes, I think so. I think people are being very choosy where they're shopping and you know, aware that everyone has to do their bit and encourage the local community. Local growers and buying seasonal produce. So yes, definitely.
Coming, I've just bought my Kentish apples this morning, my Kentish pears. Are you seeing definitely a trend perhaps towards people trying to come to markets rather than go to the big supermarkets?
Well, I'd like to think so, and you know, not that I'm anti-supermarkets, but I think they have their place, and so do farmers markets and independent shops, you know, on the high street. And as a consumer, as a customer, I think that we owe it to them to shop in these places. And it's not just about shopping; it's about communicating, you know, making contact with the community. And it's a great way to socialise and to meet people, to meet your neighbours. And we're always saying we don't know who our neighbours are. But if you go to the local market, farmers market, you get to meet people and you have a conversation over buying a bunch of carrots. Yes. Now, isn't that wonderful? Yes. I think it is.
I've just been tasting the honey. Fantastic. And the flavours in the honey were... I mean, you just can't do that in a bigger shop. Now, celebrity chef, my young son was very impressed that I was meeting you, and he decided suddenly that he wanted to be a chef, and I just slapped him around the face and said, do you realise the hours that these guys do? How are you seeing this celebrity chef thing happening now? You know, because we all know that actually most 90% of work as a chef is blimmin' hard graft.
It is incredibly hard work, and I still clock up about 14 to 16 hours a day, and a lot of that is still spent in the kitchen. But you know, media, you know, the media profile of the chef is good. It does bring in some youngsters into our industry. Mm. However, some of the kids, they, you know, they come into our industry for the wrong reason. They want to be the next Jamie Oliver, Gordon Ramsay, or dare I say me. But what they don't realise is that it is hard graft. Yeah. And it didn't happen overnight. Jamie Oliver didn't become a star overnight. He worked his backside off many, many hours to get to where he is now. So, yes, it is hard work, very hard work, but it is very rewarding.
And how did you start off?
I started off as an apprentice at the age of 16, you know, working terribly long hours. But I loved, you know, I just had a passion for cooking. And, you know, I was almost born in a kitchen. So it was, for me, it was just a natural progression. You know, I can't imagine myself doing anything other than what I'm doing now.
I now have a vision of your mum and dad boiling flannels, you know, in the kitchen for your imminent birth. Tell me, what was the most memorable meal you've had in the last year?
Oh, my word.
It can be anything.
No.
It could be cheese on toast at your house.
Oh, you see, that's very, so difficult to answer, because I've had so many. I'm very fortunate. I do go and dine in some of the most finest establishments in the world. But very often I think... I'll tell you what, I will answer this, and I'll answer it truthfully. Yeah. Very often, you know, the finest meal is a moment in time. Mm. And it's not just what's put in front of you, but it's with whom you eat it.
Yeah.
And I ran the London Marathon last week, and after you run a marathon, you are incredibly hungry. And my wife, I was very fortunate, she cooked dinner for me, and she cooked the most delicious, and I mean delicious, roast chicken. And it was a proper chicken, not one of those horrible cheap chickens. It was a chicken that cost a little bit of money.
Yeah.
But it had been running around, and it had got proper bone structure.
A happy chicken, we call them on Scoff.
A happy chicken, indeed. Yes, you know exactly what I mean.
Yeah.
And it was cooked beautifully, and had crispy skin, and I devoured that chicken. And in fact, I'm salivating just talking about it now. And it was the most magical moment, and it shared with my wife. I was, as I said, knackered because I'd run the marathon, and there was nothing left on that chicken's bone. It was a skeleton at the end of it, and it was washed down with the most delicious bottle of claret, so I was in heaven.
That sounds fantastic. And did you then simmer it in a, to make a stock?
Of course.
Mon Dieu. Mais oui. Thank you very much. And who should we be looking out for this year, do you reckon? Young chefs, any names to look out for?
There are many. I mean, the one thing I will say, it is wonderful to see that there are, you know, loads and loads of young boys and girls coming into our industry, very, very talented, and British, and that's wonderful. That really is wonderful to see. Too many to mention, too many to name check, but yeah, just carry on doing it. If you're a young chef, boy or girl out there, or you want to be a chef, just keep at it.
Michelle Roux, thank you very much from Shibbon Farmers Market, and I hear you're going to be back in June.
Hopefully, yes.
Thank you very much. And that was Fabulous Dusty after a really interesting interview. It was great to meet Michelle Roux. What a nice all-round guy. And talking of nice all-round guys, we have got the brilliant, most impressive Ben Bartlett, who is 22?
22, yep.
22, and started off his own business. Well, tell me about it. How did you get this idea for selling insects and making people eat mealworms and critters, like crispy critters, mealworms in lollies, salt and vinegar crickets, cocoa bugs, and barbecue mealworms, Dr. John Sykes.
I know, it sounds amazing, doesn't
it? How did you ever think of doing this?
Well, I didn't really intend to start this business, to be honest. It was just one of those things that happened. I started my first business at 17, running children's parties and things with reptiles and birds of prey. And I saw another company selling edible insects inside lollies. So I thought, oh,
where was that?
That was
it in
just
England?
Online. Yeah, it was in England, right. Online. And I phoned the guy up and said, look, I'd love to sell some of these in my party bags for the kids.
Mm.
And he said, sorry, I can't sell you any. I don't sell them out. And I was like, oh, it's a bit strange. So I thought, well, I still want to do it. So I found a manufacturer.
Well, so was he just keeping them for himself?
He
or?
Basically sold them himself and didn't like to sell them to other people.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. So I found the producer over in California and ended up importing a couple. And it just grew from there. It was very, very small at first, sold a few online every week. And then after a year or two, my dad came into the business and we phoned up I'm a Celebrity one day because we thought edible insects, I'm a Celebrity, it's the perfect match.
Yeah.
So we basically phoned them up and they said, yeah, come down, bring us some samples and show us. And literally a week later, sat in the office with a brand director at ITV, which is a little bit scary to say the least.
You've done so well. Now, this is the new word that we've learnt today, entomophagy,
which is basically the scientific word for eating insects.
Scientific, right, okay. So, I mean, how did going on to the TV show help with your business? I mean, did it give you a huge boost?
It did. I think it's because it's such a well-recognised brand.
Yeah.
And people didn't know who Bushgrub were at first. But as soon as the shops started to see that this company had the licensing from I'm Celebrity, they were a bit more confident stocking some of the products in their shops. And it really did take off from there. We're now in shops like Menkind and Hawkins Bazaar.
All right, yeah, Hawkins Bazaar.
Which mainly do gifty, gadgety type bits, but our products fit perfectly there. And they've sold tens of thousands of them.
And somebody told me, I think it was your dad, when he was on Business Bunker a couple of years ago, when I was forced to eat all these critters, some weddings and people have them.
Well, what we do is, because I've also run the business, like I say, with the reptiles and birds of prey, I go out to do shows at birthday parties and school talks, and I offer them the chance to have a bush tucker trial type thing. So I turn up with all of the live snakes and the spiders and things and then offer them the insects. And people are completely horrified or disgusted at first. But once they try them, they realise that they're actually quite tasty and they're not that bad. It's just the thought of eating insects.
It is, but they are actually quite nutritious.
Very, very nutritious. Everyone, I'm sure, has heard of the protein levels. Crickets, for example, about 50% protein by weight, which is a huge amount, but they're high in calcium and B vitamins as well.
And it could be argued, I mean, we had a vegetarian show not long ago, a couple of weeks back, with the fat carrot, and who else was on? I can't remember the vegetarian show. The fat carrot and... it's all blurred. But we did have the fat carrot. She's a well-known vegetarian. But if people, you know, because we are finding it very hard to feed the world.
Yeah.
With cows, and I mean, surely we, you know, if we had farmer Charles Tassel on, he'd tell us that. So maybe, do you think, Ben, that insects might be the way forward?
I think there's a good chance. I think eating a whole insect is a bit too much for people at the moment.
I mean, the scorpions, as I remember, that was the scary one.
Yeah, but they just look so odd, and I don't think people associate the look of an insect with food at the moment, but they're a lot more efficient to produce than cattle or standard livestock. They convert the food into meat a lot more efficiently. They need less water, they need less space, so there are a lot of benefits.
Now, you're based in Sittingbourne in Kent, aren't you? And so are you finding that you're travelling a lot now with this? Or
not too much.
What's your catchment for the school visits that you do with the owls and the snakes?
It's mainly across the southeast that we go out to.
Talking of owls, I saw in the papers about the British Britain's Got Talent owl, and people were saying that the owl was very traumatised.
Yeah.
I don't know if listeners saw that, but it was in quite a few of the papers, the dailies and the nationals. What do you think? What was your impression of that owl and what they were doing?
I wasn't really paying too much attention to it. It was just on in the background. But I keep an owl and take him out to shows. I think he was just more startled than anything. They're not the smartest of creatures in the world.
Really?
So animals think differently to us. They haven't got the same range of emotions that a human has got. So I don't know whether it would sit there and think, oh, I'm scared. Mm. Because has it got the capacity in its brain to think like that? I don't think it was. I think it was a bit startled at the amount of noise, but
and the
I'm
light.
Sure it's fine.
Yeah, the light as well.
Probably
yeah.
The lighting. Although that type of owl that he has does come out during daylight hours.
Oh, so, does it?
Yeah.
Okay, what's your owl that you've got in your garden?
I have a great horned owl, which is native across America.
And as a kid growing up, because you studied, you got an honours in animal management at Greenwich Uni.
Yeah.
As a kid growing up, were you always very interested in this in animals?
Yeah, I don't know where it came from.
Were you one of those awful boys that had snakes in their bed and
I wanted
under the
to
pillow
be.
And things?
I pestered my mum for about 10 years to let me keep a snake, and it was just every day I'd put posters around the house and saying, can I have a snake? And eventually she said yes, and then my room ended up being full of weird creatures.
We've got our friends listening in from Canterbury. It's at Venom Tech on the Twitter, and they actually have, I'm going to see them soon, but they have spiders and things, especially for use for pharmaceutical purposes and snakes, you know, the snake bites and things like that.
Yeah.
So do you deal with spiders?
I do. I keep a few spiders myself.
What kind of spiders?
I have a Lowland Ivory Ornamental, which is quite venomous. He doesn't get handled. A Mexican Flame-Leg Tarantula and a Choco Golden Knee, which is about 8 inches across. Lovely big tarantula.
That sounds like my idea of hell. Okay, so tell me what your favourites are. You know, what do you think is most popular? This, I mean, the mealworm lolly sounds disgusting to me. and I did eat one, I remember, last time. And the cocoa bugs, well, the cocoa perhaps would be quite pleasant.
You mentioned earlier the scorpions being the most disgusting, but the scorpion lolly, we do a blueberry one, which is an electric blue colour, and that is our best seller by far.
Really?
Everybody loves, the flavours on them are brilliant in the lollies.
So they're going for the blueberry?
I think they're going more for the look and the appearance of it. It's big and it's scary, and they're buying it as a novelty at the moment, but we are starting to introduce more so products that are not novelty, they're more insects as a future food source. So with the cricket flower that you mentioned, we're looking
the cricket flower. I'm just listening. Here we are, listen, I've got a big bag of it here. And come on, Ben, what can we do with this cricket flower?
Cricket flower is a very, very new product.
There's nothing crawling in it.
Nothing crawling. It's basically crickets cooked for a very long time at a high temperature.
Yeah.
And then they're ground down into a powder and they can be put into recipes. So you could use it in a protein bar, a health food bar. If people have got nut allergies, the crickets taste like nuts, so you could mix them into products that nut allergy sufferers couldn't eat, but you would still get the flavour of nuts in there for them. So there's a lot of different avenues that we're looking to explore, and on Friday actually I'm off to experiment with some health food bars that we're making with the cricket flour.
Right, so are you on the lookout? Is there anything you want the scoffers listening in to ask? Do you need chefs or people to start using this, or
if
what are you looking for?
Chefs are interested in trying to cook with bugs, then by all means get in touch and we'll send you out some samples and see what you can do with them. I think Hicks Restaurant, he's starting to do some grasshopper type aperitifs.
Where's that based, Ben?
That is in Dorset, I think.
Okay.
He's down that way.
Right. I mean, I can see, you know, health bars maybe,
And particularly people who've got nut allergies. There's an awful lot of people with nut allergies, and
that
would be a great step forward for them.
Yeah.
And I'm sure chefs will be interested in that because they always have to say whether there are nuts in food, don't they?
And there's a unique flavour to the insect. It's not horrible.
I remember they were very tasty.
And looked into a bit more.
They're tasty.
It's psychological as much as anything, isn't
it? Yeah, I think definitely.
It's the legs, really, when you see the
legs. Maybe the eyes as well.
Yeah. this is your new venture then, to start using the flower and perhaps...
More so. At the moment, we're very much in the novelty market with the insects, but, of course, they are food at the end of the day, so they're more than safe to eat, and we're just looking into the health food market as a new avenue.
Excellent.
Are the restrictions placed on it from the government in terms of what you can have?
That's percentage? A very, very grey area at the moment. Because we don't typically eat insects in the UK, it's very difficult to find out. So we're just researching into that at the moment.
Which countries do they eat insects in?
Typically Asia, Africa.
China, especially. That's where I most of my
yeah,
insects.
Yeah, exactly.
But then some countries eat monkey brains, don't they?
Well, they do in China as well.
And when we were talking about, you know, animals not having feelings and emotions, like, I don't know if you've seen Monkey World.
Yeah.
I watched just one, and I've recorded all the rest. It was just amazing. That little chimpanzee who's been abandoned by its mum lying there, and then the other little and they'd bitten it, hadn't they, the pack.
Yeah, they're very intelligent creatures, the chimpanzees.
Incredible, incredible. And that makes really good listening. Oh, Venom Tech are saying hello to you, Ben. I don't know if you follow them, but you must meet them. They're in Canterbury.
Yeah, I've worked with a guy that works with them, Pete Gibbons, who keeps some of their venomous snakes. So
if you're looking on the Twitter, that's at Venom Research, they are. And, yeah, sounds fascinating. I feel a bit creepy-crawly now, suddenly. Ben, thanks for coming on.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
It's really good to have you, and we'll have you on again. To check out Ben's Ben and Guy, and Gary, the daddy, who's doing all the work there, of course, www.bush-grub.co.uk, and you can follow them on Twitter at bushgrub. So if you want to get your hands on some crispy critters, or a salt and vinegar cricket, or indeed learn more about entomophagy.
One thing I'd like to just say, if I may, people are a little bit apprehensive about eating insects at first, but in the UK we eat weird food like pork scratchings. That's a very strange thing to eat.
Yeah,
we eat welts and mussels and things like that.
Snails?
Weird. Exactly, we eat snails anyway. Mm. These are just insects of the land rather than insects of the sea, if you like.
That is a good one, and I will bear that in mind the next time I crunch on a critter.
I brought some along if you want some.
Yes, John.
Yes, we'll try some after the show.
Yes. John is volunteering. We will have them. Perhaps we'll take them into Business Bunker and force-feed Paul Andrews. Because they're slimming. They're very slimming.
Yes, well, they'll help with that squirrel, won't it?
Dr. John, just round up for me.
Well, yes, we've had lots of tweets, but I thought I would mention something about spinach, which is something that is obviously a very good antioxidant because it's known as a carotenoid.
So spinach with a mealworm, perhaps.
Yes, with a mealworm, exactly. And studies have found that people with a rich diet of carotenoids have a lower risk of middle-age-related macular degeneration, which is a cause of blindness. So you should really eat spinach with your grubs, you know.
Cricket salad, why not?
Cricket salad, exactly.
Exactly.
So there we are. Yes, so I've got a few more things that we've done.
Miriam McGurk, who's at the Josie Maguire, Tales from Turkey, has enjoyed the Spanish flavour, said it's put her in the mood for packing, going back to her Turkish mountain retreat. So perhaps you need Colin Harkness there to tell you about Turkish wine.
Well, exactly, or you need Ben along there to feed her some crickets.
Yes, Ben would. Peel one for her.
Need a carver to compliment some bugs now.
I don't know whether I mentioned Angus McNabb, did I?
Yes, you did.
Hello to him, another new listener.
Yes,
sorry,
couldn't
remember. Carry on. Chickworth Valley are listening in.
Yes, I see.
Michelle Rue, such a great person to have on board. We're looking forward to Farmers Market Month, which of course is in June. So we are too. We'll be bouncing about the farmers markets, no doubt, scoffing, won't we, Dr. John?
Yes, we are. Well, indeed. And we've had Squarries on. They're coming on in May, talking about their wine, their sparkling wine that will be launching in June.
Hopefully they'll bring lots of samples.
Well, I'm sure they will be, yes. I'm sure they will do. We've also had Picture Sue, who's a director of Kent Ideas, has been tweeting in.
The Fat Carrot,
indeed.
Yes. I had some of her hummus, her beetroot, and I also had a vegetarian tagine that she makes, which is very nice. Perhaps she'd put some crickets in. No, she wouldn't. She's a vegetarian. She wouldn't.
Well, I suppose they don't count as vegetarian food, do the insects?
We do have some vegetarians trying them. So
oh, okay. Perhaps we should get the Fat Carrot to put some in her in some of her vegetarian.
I mean, there's dishes. An abundance, Ben, isn't there, of insects?
Yeah, I mean.
But it's more the principle of eating, isn't it?
You've been listening to the Scoff and Quaff Show with the fabulous Ben, who has told us all about his crispy critters. We've also had hello to Gary, the daddy at home doing all the work. And we've also had Colin Harkness, the Spanish wine guru, up there on his little mountain lolling in the sun, telling us about sparkling carvers. And Michelle Roux, of course, popping in to support Kent Farmers Markets. And tune in next week, 11 to 12, on Channel Radio. Coming up at 1, stay tuned for the Paul Andrews Business Bunker show. Follow him at Business Bunker. From me, from John, goodbye.
Channel Radio. Channelradio.co.uk.
Well, get out in that kitchen and rattle those pots and pans.
Another great Jules Serkin, Scoff and Quaff show on Channel Radio. No alpacas were consumed during this production.
And I roll my breakfast because I'm a hungry man. I say shake, rattle and roll.
On Channel Radio.
Channelradio.co.uk.